This is the Australian Butchers Guild podcast, brought to you by Meat and Livestock Australia, the podcast for passionate butchers.
G'day and thanks for joining me for the Australian Butchers Guild podcast. I'm your host, Doug Piper. It's only a couple of weeks before Christmas, and like usual, you're all flat out getting ready for the madness of Christmas and making sure you have got enough stock to cater for the festive seasons. Then there's some of you who may have forgotten to order your point of sale kits for our popular Summer Lamb campaign. And Sam Kekovich would say, that's un-Australian, so get your orders in. You have until the 10th of December to have your orders in. If you haven't received your order on demand email from us yet, or want to be added to our database to receive your free beef and lamb materials, get in contact with us now at butchers@mla.com.au with your shop details, and don't forget to let us know what you want. Then your shop will be added to the Butchers campaign database. In this episode, I'm catching up with one of the trade's up-and-coming butchers, Sarah Wadlin. Sarah works in one of Nathan Creary's farm gate to plate stores in Sydney's southern suburbs. The Wadlin family have been in the meat industry for a number of years, and Sarah, being Sarah, wanted to do her own thing and headed out to forge a career of her own. Sarah is highly regarded amongst a lot of her peers and brings a fresh set of eyes to the industry. Welcome, Sarah.
Thanks, Doug.
So how's your day been?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty busy with Christmas orders and all that jazz.
Yeah, it's getting into that time of the year where it's going to be silly season.
Definitely is. Everyone starts getting crazy and panic buying and whatnot.
Any special orders coming through? We want a certain size turkey, or we want a certain size ham. We want the left side of the pig, not the right side.
Yeah, spring lamb.
So, Sarah, how did you come around to getting involved in the industry? I know. Look, the Wadlin family has a huge history in the Sydney meat business, but yourself, what drove you into that?
It was a bit out of the blue, to be honest. I was working at my grandfather's store just as a cashier when I was in year 11 at school, and I wasn't particularly enjoying school, and I was enjoying work more. So I decided to drop out, and I asked if I could do an apprenticeship through my grandpa, and my family weren't too keen on that idea. So I ended up leaving them and finding Farm Gate to Plate, who I'm still with. But yeah, I guess I just grew up around the meat industry and butcher shops and always going to grandpa's farm. You're around animals all the time.
Yeah, it's a great way into it. Having that bit of a background, having that family heritage there is very important to the trade too, because there's a lot of stories out there where we see future generations of families coming through. And I think it's Trevor Wadlin is his name. That was your grandfather,
That's grandpa.
I remember him very well. I bumped into him a few times. I managed to shop at Five Dock for a little while, and I think he was going into the bone and the fat and bone business at one stage, and he was trying to get everybody to come and let us take you. We'll buy the fat and bone off you, you know. Quite a colourful character, and I hope he's going well.
Yeah, he's doing all right. He's still kicking on.
Doing all right for an old fella like me.
Yeah. Oh, he's a bit older than you, but...
Thank goodness for that. I always thought he was older than me.
Yes.
So Farm Gate to Plate, how are you enjoying working there?
I love it. I love everything we do. It's just the place that I want to be at. Like, I can't see myself working anywhere else, really. We are moving forward, like, really quickly. Like, we've only been a butcher shop for just over 5 years now. Like, we've progressed so quickly and so well.
Yeah, Nathan's a great operator. I think I've met him a couple of times, maybe at a couple of functions over the years. But he came across as a really interesting fella, which we want to chat to him down the track a little bit. But I think he's one of those guys that's very passionate about the trade, very passionate about what he does and food in general, which is a bit like yourself.
Yeah. Well, it's really cool because he's not actually a butcher. So he started off, he's a carpenter, like a shop fitter by trade, but he bought a farm and then got into farmers markets and then was like, well, we're going to be cutting up meat, we need a shop. So then bought our first store at Miranda, and then we've just been extending ever since. He's always got he's always like 10 steps ahead of everyone else. Like, he's always got new ideas popping up, and he's always thinking outside the square, which I think is partly because he's not a butcher He's not stuck in those typical butcher ways. He's always got bigger and better ideas.
That's a problem with a lot of guys. I think they, you know, you've got, you're too busy. You're always in the shop. Yeah. You're always running the business, and you have no time to manage it and look outside and really see what's going on. Yeah. So, you know, having someone like yourself in the shop is very valuable and crucial to the success of the business too. Because you bring it. I remember Benny Barrow and Andrew Morabito talking very highly of you too. I think the first time I met you was at the graduation night at Granville, yeah. You know, and who's Sarah? I think I might have seen you at maybe one of the when I was going through one day, but through the TAFE one day. Yeah. But they couldn't speak highly enough of you, and the work that you do is brilliant. So it's good to see that you've got a great place. You've got a great place to start working, forging your career there with Farmgate to Plate. The thing I like about a couple of things that you were talking about to me over the phone the other day was the way that you look at meat differently. So you're using different types. You're just not using the usual, you know, Angus beef or grass-fed beef. You're using a lot of beef out of Camden Valley Farms.
Yeah, we try and we have a few different sides of the business that we do. So we have that side where we use Camden Valley veal. We use Melinda Park pork. So like a lot of local farmers, smaller farmers that we try and use and support. And then we have another side where we do like really mad, like Wagyu, dry aged beef. We were doing out of Camden veal. We were doing retired dairy cows. We were aging them. And yeah, stuff like that. Always trying to do something new and different from anyone else.
How did you find the retired dairy cattle? How did you find that eat?
It was very interesting. It was very rich. I could only eat a little bit of it because, like, we cooked up a couple of steaks at work that had been aged, and it was very rich. Like, the fat was so yellow, like, unbelievably yellow, and the meat was this dark, rich red. And, yeah, it was amazing. The flavour was really rich, intense, and like beefy, but almost too rich.
Mm. Well, do you think that
some people loved it?
Yeah. Do you think it might have been because of the dry aging too? Would have obviously given it a lot.
Oh, that definitely took a part. Yeah, in the flavor and changing. It was so tender still. Like even the first one we did, I don't think we aged, and that was still really tender and still flavorsome. But the aging process obviously makes it a whole lot better.
Yeah, it's incredible, really. When you look at the dairy cow, you know, they're a very hippie, very bony sort of an animal. They're not they're not a pretty cow like a British breed.
No, not at all.
Even the floppy-eared things up north, you know, they're not a beautiful-looking cow. But the meat that they throw out, I met a producer out at Adelong, and he crosses his Angus herd over, I don't know what breed, whether it's Holsteins or whatever, but over dairy cow. And he said he gets the best marbling out of it.
Oh, really? Wow.
Very high marble score. So, and the meat's like a different flavour to what you'd normally generally get out of a pure breed Angus. It's interesting to see that the two sides sort of merging and the interest, I think, in dairy cattle too. It's a good thing to happen for them because not only do they produce milk as the cow gets older, it can then be, you know, put out to pasture.
Well, it's not getting wasted.
Yeah, exactly. It's just not going to go into bushies down the road there. It's going to end up being enjoyed by a lot of people.
And so many people are getting on board with it now too. Like we have a lot of customers that will come back and ask for it or ask when our next body is. Like we were doing one a year basically. And so we were like taking pre-orders like months and months out before we even knew we were getting one. People are getting on board with it and really enjoying it.
Oh, that's awesome. And what about lamb? Are you using any specific breeds of lamb or lamb from a certain region? Or
We mainly do Cowra lamb, but we also, so one of our beef farmer is Wayne from Begalia Farms down in Maroochydore. And every now and again we get lambs from him, and they are seriously the best lambs. They're big, and the eyes of the colour to like massive, and they're just really, really good lambs. So we get them when we can. He normally saves them all for us. And then other than that, yeah, we use Cara lamb.
Okay, as a top up. Yeah, that's interesting. So they're larger carcasses?
Yeah, they're pretty big. Like from memory, they're like closer to the 30 kilo mark. Yeah.
I love playing with those big ones because you just get such a better yield out of them.
I know 100%.
I know that they're saying there's a lot more larger carcasses coming on to the market because of the yield that the farmer gets out of them too, the producers get out of it. But for a butcher, you can do so much more with it, like bigger leg muscles. Mm. You don't have to. I know a lot of butchers do struggle to sell a whole leg of lamb because of the price point. But you don't have to sell a whole leg of lamb, you know, which is the salespeople. So, you know, it's more about selling what you've got. So breaking down the individual muscles for different things.
100%, yeah.
The silver side eats so well as a roast. So same as the top side and the knuckle. And those lamb rumps, my favourite.
They're excellent.
Yeah.
They're like our favourite at the moment.
Yeah, they're very popular. You see them everywhere. Whether just plain, you don't even need to marinate
them. They're just easy. Little, easy, perfect for one or two, quick to cook.
Yep. I find that the ones that we get, they must be off like 20, 22 kilo lambs, the ones that I end up buying. And there's just not enough in one for two people because I like the lamb rump and you can sort of get a bit carried away when you're sort of slicing
100%.
It up. So something a little bit bigger off a 30 kilo lamb would certainly go around what that 350, probably 400 gram mark, which is
even bigger. I think. Most of the time, I get them around at least half a kilo.
Yeah, right. Okay. So that's perfect for a couple of people. So
100%,
a roast that size, magic.
Yes.
So how are you enjoying the trade? What else are you doing?
Look, I love it so much. For us, it's not just about butchery. So I think I was telling you the other day, so we have a few stores. The store that I work in, I'm the only butcher and we have three chefs, which is quite interesting. And two of them can pretty much cut anything. So they're slowly learning like how to butcher, I guess. But we do a lot of pre-prepared meals. We've started doing catering. We're starting up a condiment company. So many things, like it's endless, honestly.
Yeah, we're seeing butchers diversify a lot these days, doing a lot of different things. But
value-added products.
Yeah. The big thing, and we've hit on it a couple of times here in the podcast, a few butchers and they've employed chefs along the way and they've turned into an asset to the business because they just bring that whole different dimension to the shop, the cooking side of it. So useful to have somebody there that doesn't just say, you know, 180 degrees for 20 minutes, you know, the standard butcher, you know, response.
Yeah, they're definitely an asset, 100%. We've come a long way since, I think we've only had Drew, our head chef, he's been with us for a year and a couple of months. And since then, like, we've progressed so much. So many new things have popped up and are happening.
Yeah. And how do you find doing a lot of the, so you're making the sausages and doing a lot of the window preparation, everything in the shop?
Yes. So the store that I work in is really small, like there's a small work area. So majority of the prep stuff gets done at our other site at Miranda. So like, for instance, all the sausages and all the like beef bodies and pigs get broken there. And then I get sent primals or like sausages already done. But I set up the whole case, like I cut everything. I look after the dry age and the Wagyu.
So how long are you dry aging your beef for? What have you found to be the best?
It depends what it is. There's a few, like we dry age majority Wagyu, but we also like to do a bit of grass-fed Angus. We've got some barley-fed stuff in there at the moment. That's the grass-fed stuff I find like 2 to 3 weeks is actually really good. Some of the Wagyu we do a little bit longer, like we get up to 28 days. But yeah, sort of up to 28 days is about the max. We run through it quite quickly, so I don't think we could make it past 28 days, to be honest.
Need a bigger dry ager.
We needed a bigger dry ager for sure.
Yeah, that 28 days is, it's so common. A lot of the butchers that I speak to and the guys that we've spoken to here, that 28 day hits a mark, you know. It sort of cuts back on your yield loss. You still get that nice funky flavour and it's just enough time for those enzymes to work on the meat fibres to make it nice and delicious.
Oh, definitely.
Are you using any specific brands of Wagyu in the store?
Yeah, at the moment I've got some Sher Wagyu, I've got some 2GR, I've got some Phoenix. We did have some Jack's Creek today, but I had some Jack's Creek briskets and I sold all that. We've always got some Black Opal. We have a pretty wide variety. We try and like do a lot of different places rather than just having like sticking with one. We were doing a lot of Rangers Valley for a while, but they're everywhere now. So we try and our whole vibe is to try and do something that everyone else isn't. Like I've never really seen Sher Wagyu anywhere else around here, even the 2GR stuff, because it is quite expensive as well, especially being full blood.
All right, so what sort of dry age are you guys using?
It's just the standard like dry age Oz, I think it's called.
Yep.
Yeah. Which we're going to be getting a lot more of very soon.
More dry ages in the shop.
Yeah, for a different site. So I've got another.
Okay, they're expanding.
Store coming up very good. Soon. We are expanding.
Expanding. So again. So the Miranda store. You're in the Baronier store, and you've also got correct. The Miranda store. How does that one go?
Miranda's very different to us. So I worked there for the first 4 years that I was with Farmgate. And it's only two suburbs away, but the clientele is like complete opposite ends of the spectrum. Like Miranda, they want, like not everybody, but a lot of the time they want the cheaper sort of carts and like, you know, things like sausages and rissoles and burgers and kebabs. Whereas like Baronier, they love the Wagyu, they love the dry ager, they love the more premium things. Like we sell alcohol over there, whereas Miranda don't. But Miranda, they also have a big salad bar and stuff like that. Miranda's a lot bigger though, so I think their display case is like 4 times the size of ours. So they've got a lot more product over there, but we're a bit more like bougie.
Yeah, right, okay. Yeah, yeah, it suits the area down there.
It definitely does.
How have you found the trade in general? Like, have you had any difficulties along the way?
Honestly, I think I've had a fairly easy ride. There's always difficulties in any trade in anyone's job, really. But overall, I think it's been fairly easy. Like, I've always given everything a shot. I'm not afraid to do anything.
No, like, I know that.
Yeah. And at the start, like, a lot of people had doubts in me, and like previous managers told me not to continue doing butchery, but I was like, I'm too stubborn. I'm like, nah, stuff you. I'm going to do it.
Yeah, dig your heels in even deeper then, don't you?
Yeah. No, overall, it's been fairly easy and I've enjoyed the whole way through.
Yeah, I've met a lot of great apprentices over the years because you spend a little bit of time in TAFE. We used to give some talks to down Wollongong and Granville to the students there, and met a lot of young apprentices who have now moved on into like businesses like yourself, like managing a shop or working with a shop, or there's a young fella down there in Wollongong who's actually bought his first shop not so long ago. But the trade itself, like for somebody wanting to get into it, recommend? Yes, no, maybe?
Oh, 100%. If that's what you want to do, dive into it, but make sure you choose wisely where you go, because there's some places that a lot of people think butchering's a dying trade, but I think it's the complete opposite. You're just thinking in the wrong way. If you go to the wrong store, they just do your typical standard steaks and that's it. They don't want to open their minds. Whereas like, you know, we're going down the track of restaurants and bars and like we already sell alcohol. You got to keep moving with the times. You can't stay still and just stick with boring steaks. So definitely do it, but
yeah, you've got to, I suppose there's different demographics around the place too. You've got to be in the right area. You've got to have the customers there that want that sort of different product, but it doesn't hurt to try it. You can always try something new.
No, not at all.
Take those blinkers off, like we said earlier, take the blinkers off and open up your eyes and see what's happening around there. But you know, for a young apprentice coming through, or starting their apprenticeship, or a young butcher going to their first shop, you know, I think it's a great career move. There's plenty of opportunities out there. Crikey, you know.
Definitely.
If I had my time again, I'd love to be sort of just out of my apprenticeship, you know, probably 40 years younger than I am now, and a bit fitter.
Yeah.
A few less beers under the belly and just really, really enjoy getting into the trade a lot more, because when I started it was all very much chops and sausages and steaks, you know, that was it.
Yeah, it was so back then. Yeah,
we actually had electricity too, by the way. We had powered cool rooms, not just ice cubes up the top. Actually, one of the shops that I managed for a very short time at Five Dock, we had hay on the floor in the cool room, which it should have been sawdust, but he was getting hay still in. And one time I opened up the door and I looked above the door and I thought, what's this door here? And I looked inside and there was a rack there, and that's where they used to slide the big ice cubes in. So a guy called Freddie Steen. He was in the Yellow Pages advertisement called, "I've got the best loin in Des Moines." That was his tagline. And my boss at the time said to me,
"That's so cringe.
That shop's up for sale. I've always wanted to buy that shop. I'm going to buy it." Like, it was an old shop. It was a hard shop because the customers went there for Fred. You know, they didn't go there for anything else because Freddie was looking after them. But it was an interesting thing to see that, like, that where that cube fell in there. I've gone, crikey, Charlie, you know, this isn't up. Didn't even have running water. It had a copper out the back, a gas copper, at this, the mincer had a leather belt around it. And a lot of butchers out there would understand what I'm talking about. Didn't have a normal mechanical mincer, but it had a motor and it had a big leather belt that ran the drive for the worm. And it must have had, without a word of a lie, I reckon it had about 50 of these clamps put on it because it kept breaking. Instead of buying a new belt, he put another clamp on it. It made a heck of a noise as it went around, but it did the job. But that's probably one of the oldest shops I've ever worked in, but it was a real eye-opener.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. I haven't heard anything like that.
And you guys have got it so
easy. At least we've got luxury.
Exactly. Well, Sarah, look, really appreciate your time. Really love talking to you. And I hope you have a great Christmas. And don't overdo it, mate. Just, make sure you take a little bit of time out for Sarah.
Yeah, we'll be good. We're all set.
Good stuff. All right. Well, you take care of yourself.
Thanks, Doug.
Thank you, Sarah. We'll see you again soon.
Thank you. See ya.
Cheers. Here we are with MLA's Market Information Manager, Steve Bignall. How are you today, Steve?
Yeah, good. Thanks for having us, Doug.
No worries, mate. How's everything looking out there at the moment?
There's some really positive stories coming through from the lamb and sheep game at the moment. Mm-hmm. Cattle, it's a little bit tighter.
Some not so good news on the cattle side by the sound of that and by the look at your face. So how about sheep, mate? You mentioned sheep earlier today.
Mate, so sheep prices have come off the sort of highs that we saw earlier in spring. And also, encouragingly, we've really seen the number of sheep through the sale yards and being slaughtered up increasing. So slaughter is 3% above last year, week on week, and we're getting close to 400,000 animals a week. So a really good thing coming into Christmas. Prices are down and we're slaughtering more, so there will be lamb supply for Christmas.
Wow, so the old leg of lamb will make a resurgence on the plate, on the Christmas table, so that's a great information, that's good to see. But I suppose beef, where are we with that at the moment? Prices are very high at the moment, as you mentioned earlier. So what's the future hold for that side of it?
At the sale yard level, prices for young cattle are above $11 a kilo. At the sale yard level, and largely been driven by the wet season in Queensland. So farmers are looking, are competing with each other in feedlots, there's a lot of demand pushing the price up. And what we're seeing is therefore less animals being slaughtered at the moment, week on week. We're down 30,000 animals a year, or 20%. So a bit below 100,000 animals being processed each week. So there is demand from producers is seeing the price being near record levels. And then that's flowing through to less animals being processed. There is a little bit of a difference. So animals are going cheaper in Victoria than they are going through in Queensland and northern New South Wales.
I saw on the news the other day, I was watching something on the sale yards reports, and I noticed there was a pen of, I think it was about 50 little wieners there, and they went for $2,600 a head.
Yep. So people are buying young cattle with the idea that they can put weight on because they have got grass and grain. So those light young cattle are in high demand, and if they're a heifer, so if they're a female, also in demand because they'll obviously be able to breed from them.
There's some big money being paid out there for a lot of cattle. Yep. So what about, say for instance, Wagyu, grain-fed cattle at the moment, where are they sitting at the moment?
So we've actually had an increase of 15% of Wagyu on feed this year compared to last. We are seeing the number of grass-fed animals or grass-fed production slightly down. It's just south of 50% of domestic production and domestic consumption. It was around 50% for the last two quarters. But what we are seeing is that animals are being fed for longer, and the Wagyu, there's growth in that Wagyu sector, which means that people are getting that longer fed product in for consuming domestically. So that'll hit the butcher's shop.
Mm, yeah, excellent. We often see, with the processes closing down over the Christmas period, supply gets to tighten up. Does tighten up a fair bit, I think. But I normally butchers will just get by, though they might have to change brands, that sort of side of it. With their normal sort of everyday beef that they buy, their graded products that they're buying out there. But having, I suppose, availability of Wagyu will probably not an excess of it, but will definitely prop up their offer, what they'll be able to have out there for their customers.
There is more available. And I suppose that touches on a few things, is that the close downs, there will be close downs, but because there hasn't been as much throughput, there might not be as much repairs and maintenance and staff closures across Christmas. The other thing is, with the tight supply for cattle, I think it really feeds into a positive 2022 story. We're rebuilding the herd so that there will be cattle and supply in 2022. It's sort of a short-term supply bottleneck.
So definitely reasonable supply out there through 2022, and hopefully with the numbers coming through a little, they'll start to generate a bigger herd, and I suppose exports will be continuing to be quite strong, or probably grow even further over the next 12 months, because we've seen them, with what's happened in the last couple of years, exports were quite low, and we're starting to see more and more demand for Aussie product overseas.
Definitely. And there's been a few products. So Brazil's still struggling to get their exports into China a little bit. Argentina's got some inflationary issues at home, which is affecting their exports. So the trade game is really interesting. And there's still the global protein deficit because of African swine fever in China, which has meant that they've had to cull a significant amount of their herd.
Well, that's what we've got for now, I suppose. So what's up for Christmas, mate? You heading home?
I can't get back to WA, but going up to the northern beaches, north coast, so we'll enjoy that.
Awesome, mate. Well, all the best for Christmas, mate. Thanks a lot for your time throughout the year, and we'll catch up with you early next year with the Australian Butchers Guild podcast.
Anytime. Thanks for having us, Doug.
Good on you, Steve. Well, that's a wrap, and thanks to all of you out there who are listening in and sending through your thoughts. I really hope you're enjoying the Butchers Guild podcast as much as I am and finding the information useful. Just so you don't miss out on any future episodes, don't forget to click subscribe to the podcast. We now have an audience that spans across the globe. Now, it's a big g'day to everyone out there, wherever you are, especially to all of you butchers in the UK who will have to stay up extra late at night to watch the English cricket team get beaten again. Just kidding, fellas. All the best for another great test series. Anyway, if you want any more information about anything we discussed in this episode, simply drop me an email at butchers@mla.com.au. I'm Doug Piper, and all the very best for the rest of the week wherever you are in the world.
You've been listening to the Australian Butchers Guild podcast, produced by The Sound Business.